This program contains explicit content and subject matter which may be unsuitable for some listeners. Discretion is advised.
You are listening to a Pleasure Podcast. For more from our sex podcast collective, visit pleasurepodcasts.com.
Smart. Sexy. Kinky. Fun.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud with your host, sex educator, author, and filmmaker, Tristan Taramino. It's sex-positive radio like you've never heard before. Tristan talks about sexuality from every angle with leading authors, experts, artists, and icons. From sex education and sexual politics to BDSM and non-monogamy, nothing is off limits. So get ready to open your mind and expand your horizons. This is Sex Out Loud. And now here's your host, Tristan Taramino.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Hey, it is Friday, March 15th. We are live. You can call us anytime with a question or comment. If you're listening live, call us at 866-472-5788. 866-472-5788. And if you're not listening live, you can call our voicemail at 323-SEX-8266. 323-SEX-8266. I want to just acknowledge and send my love out to the folks in New Zealand and around the world who were affected by yet another act of white terrorism. Let's call it what it is. But on to better news. So this next person, first of all, I've known her now for, I think 20 years. We'll go back over the calendar when we figure it out. And she's been a guest on the show several times. But fun fact, she was our fifth guest on our show when the show first started, and that was June 29th, 2012. So that's kind of cool because she was like the first 10. Let me tell you more about her. Rachel Kramer Bussell is a writer, editor, event organizer, and writing instructor. She's edited over 60 anthologies, including Erotic Teasers, Best Women's Erotica of the Year, Volumes 1 to 4, Come Again, Sex Toy Erotica, The Big Book of Orgasms, Spanked, and many others. Her writing has been published in the New York Times, the Washington Post, O, the Oprah Magazine, Self, Elle, Rolling Stone, and elsewhere. She writes regularly about book publishing for Forbes Online. Her erotica has spanned numerous subjects from boxing to French fries to Monica Lewinsky to a dishwashing fetish to a kissing party. And her work has appeared in Best American Erotica 2004 and 2006, as well as Zane's bestsellers Succulent, Chocolate Flava 2, and Purple Panties. She teaches in-person erotic writing workshops around the country, as well as consulting at eroticawriting101.com. And she's doing an upcoming online class via Teachable. Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, Rachel.
Thank you.
Have we known each other for 20 years, Rachel?
Something like that. I don't know exactly, but if it's not 20, it's close.
It's very close. So we're dating ourselves. But the fascinating thing about this is that we were some of the earliest people writing and editing erotica. And so I feel like you have a unique perspective on... First of all, I remember when erotica wasn't even like a section in a bookstore. Mm-hmm. Now it's its own section. But before it was like, where do we put this? Self-help, women's studies, gay and lesbian. Like, you know, it was always showing up in these like weird psychology, like these weird places. But I'm wondering what you think has changed about the writing. You get to see so much erotica coming across your desk. And over this decades that you've been doing this, what do you think has changed?
That's a good question because, I mean, I think there's just more people writing different kinds of erotica. But, I mean, in some ways, I don't know if, I think the market for it has changed, and now there's more easily accessible things like dinosaur erotica and more niche fetish erotica. But in terms of, as an anthology editor who's read, you know, thousands of stories and reads hundreds every year, I mean, I don't really know if the fundamentals of it have changed, you know, because I think part of that is that there's always new people coming up and wanting to write about things that, you know, maybe someone else wrote about that, or 20 someone's or 100 someone's over the years, but for them it's totally new, and so they're bringing all this new life into it. And so to me, like, that's what's exciting about it, that no matter what you're writing about, whether it's something that feels like a new sexual fetish or kink or act, or it's something that is more commonplace, like, if you're a good writer, and it's, I think especially, or kind of goes along with good writing, if you have this passion for it, you know, it feels new. Does that make sense? Sorry, mm-hmm. if that wasn't too
No, that
specific.
Totally makes sense. Yeah. And in this particular edition of Best Women's Erotica, is there a particular story that, like, caught you off guard, or you weren't expecting to kind of feel the way you felt after you read it? I know you're not supposed to say favorites, so I'm trying to give you a little.
It's interesting because, you know, sometimes I have, and I know I'm not supposed to say it, like, I'll have maybe a personal favorite or one that I really loved. But then what's interesting to me too is seeing which ones readers really gravitate towards. And there's one called Seven Sweets and Seven Sours by Megan Hart that's an Amish story. It's an Amish queer love story, and it's a little bit bittersweet. It's also really beautiful. It's about two women where one is, you know, trying to get the other to kind of go with her and, you know, be with her, and the other one is, she's resisting it. Like, she can't envision being able to really do that. You know, leave everything she's known. And a lot of people have commented on, oh, Amish erotica. And I think sort of like that sounds, ooh, like,
that sounds very
clickbait.
Yeah, it does.
But in the writing, it's really the opposite of that. It's really tender and beautiful. And you know, I was going to say realistic. I mean, I don't know for sure if it's realistic, but it has that feel of emotions that anyone could relate to, whether or not you know, are part of that world or not. And to me, that's something that I do look for, you know, people who can tap into a culture or a subculture and bring it to life and make it, you know, moving for the reader, and sometimes moving in an erotic way, you know, moving as in turns them on, but sometimes moving in a different way just, you know, touches their heart and makes them think about it long after they finished it.
Yeah. Well, it also strikes me, it kind of works on several levels. First of all, forbidden love and taboos are always a turn on for people. Like, taboo never gets old. But of course, everyone has different taboos, right? But of course, the taboo is built into this because they're Amish. But it's also interesting because I would say that as a rule, Amish people are desexualized, right? We think of them as, like, quite old-fashioned, conservative, like, not with the times, certainly not queer or same-sex loving. So I love the idea of taking that and turning it on its head, because I think we've got to continually stop desexualizing groups by their culture, by their community, by their ability, all those things, right? So I love the idea of desire in a place where we would otherwise say it's not there, right?
Exactly. And, you know, I think there's just so much in this one story. I mean, I don't have room to publish, you know, 30 pages or 40 pages. And sometimes people are like, these are too short, I wanted to read more. And I totally understand that. But, you know, I can't do that. But within, you know, 8 or 10 pages, you know, this writer can really pull at your heartstrings. But also, there's also, I think, social commentary in there. There's a line that says, My voice is hard and firm and low, rough. It is not a feminine voice of soft murmurs and gentle requests. My voice is a command, a man's voice. And Hannah responds as she would to a man who'd spoken. And so there's this gender element to this story too. And this, and you also, I mean, for me, it made me think about, you know, could these people have been happy together if, you know, they weren't constrained by the way that society is set up, and, you know, what else could have been in store for them. I mean, there's also, you know, hot sex scenes, but against the backdrop this one woman's married to a man and, you know, her lover is asking her to, you know, be with her, and, you know, she can't do that.
This also reminds me of, have you seen the movie Disobedience?
I haven't.
Rachel Adams Rachel Weisz.
I didn't see that, but I heard about it.
It's good. No, I totally recommend it. It takes place in the Hasidic. Is it in the Hasidic or Orthodox? In a Hasidic or Orthodox Jewish community. I'm sorry that I can't totally remember. My brain is a little fried. Hot sex scenes and also lots of social commentary, which is like my favorite combination. Well, you are going to share a little piece of a story from the book. Is it going to be that story?
It's not going to be that story, okay. But I definitely encourage everyone to listen to that. And it's coming out on a podcast on audio. So you can listen to it. But I do, you know, you can also listen to the whole thing on Audible, but it is coming out as its own standalone one. But I wanted to read a different story that it's about a particular, a fetish or kink that I thought might go well with what we're going to talk about later. And also is just another favorite of mine because it's something I don't see a lot of in erotica generally or in my inbox, which is always something I look for. It's hard to say. People always say, like, what do you really want to see? I'm like, I don't know. It really is. I know it when I see it. But this story was definitely, and I know it when I see it. It's about tickling. Spoiler alert.
Okay, well, we're going to take our first commercial break, hear from our great sponsors, and then when we come back, we are going to get a little sample of Best Women's Erotica of the Year. Stay with us more with Rachel Kramer Bustle when we get back. The Pleasure Chest has a lot going on in the month of March. In honor of International Women's Day, Le Wand released a special edition Feel My Power Wand Vibrator. And it's one of the most beautiful toys I've ever seen and had the pleasure of using. You can get yours at Pleasure Chest. And if you buy any Le Wand massager, you get a cool gift pack while supplies last. March 17th to the 24th is Spring Fling. Spend $75 or more online and receive a free pocket rocket and free shipping. As always, there are a ton of great classes this month at their New York, LA, and Chicago locations. From impact play to sex over 40 to blowjobs and beyond. Go to pleasurechest.com to find out more. Use coupon code Tristan at checkout for a free massage candle with purchase. Hey gang, you may already know about the tried and true Clone a Willy to make a silicone replica of any penis. In fact, a while back, we had actual listeners try it out and their reviews were stellar. Well, now there's something brand new. The Clone a Pussy Plus Sleeve Kit. First of its kind, Clone a Pussy Plus allows anyone to cast an exact replica of a vulva in silicone and attach it to the included silicone masturbation sleeve. This is a truly one-of-a-kind toy and perfect for long-distance relationships. The creation process itself can be really fun, and the results make a great gift for any occasion. Clone a Willy is a woman-run company, and their products are sourced in the U.S. and hand-assembled in Portland, Oregon. And you know I've got a deal for you. Use the promo code Tristan for 20% off your entire order on cloneawilly.com. Hey, why don't you clone it and bone it?
Hey, my name is Samar, and until a couple weeks ago, I was a pretty ordinary guy. But all that changed when I dropped out of college to try something a little bit different.
Oh, yeah! Oh, baby!
Becoming the world's first Asian-American male porn star.
Most people at least have the decency to starve for a couple months before resorting to porn.
I knew trying to make it in porn wasn't easy, but nobody said it was going to be this hard.
Kid, that is easily the sickest shit I've heard all day, and I just came from a set of My Asshole is Your Playground Volume 3.
Like I said, my name is Samar, but you can call me Masala Jones. Masala Jones is an original scripted comedy coming soon to Apple Podcasts. Check out at Masala Jones Podcast on Instagram for more information.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. I'm talking today with writer, editor, event organizer, teacher, Rachel Kramer Bustle. And a new edition of Best Women's Erotica of the Year came out recently. And she is going to share a little piece of a story for us. You gave us a spoiler beforehand, which is it's about tickling.
Yes. And I'm just going to read a little bit and then we can talk about it. But this is from a story called Breathe by Patricia Elzey. And I think all you need to know is that Erin and Naomi are on a first date at a coffee shop, and right now they're talking. Naomi looked down at her hands, which were open and palm up on the table, a sign of vulnerability. I can always find submissives who want to be spanked or slapped or pinched or any manner of percussion and pain. They like to show me how brave and strong they are, being spanked so naughtily. That's nice, I guess. I do enjoy spanking people. Is that it? I like being spanked. In fact, I volunteer as tribute right now, Erin said enthusiastically. No, that's not it. If you want me to go home with you to play, I'm willing. But I gotta know what I'm in for first. No surprises. Naomi sighed. I want to tie you up. She paused to dramatically finish her espresso. I want to tie you up and tickle you. Erin laughed hard for a full 20 seconds before she noticed Naomi was not sharing the laughter. Oh, said Erin, her smile failing. You're serious. Quite serious, Naomi replied. Sexy tickling, of course. A wave of confusion fell over Erin's freckled face as she became acutely aware of how ticklish she was. And to be tied down? It sounded awful, unbearable. The idea of sexy tickling was an oxymoron to her. Did that mean her whole body would be exposed? Erin snapped out of her head when she saw Naomi's devious smile. That smile tugged at something deep within her. My curiosity will be my downfall. And your online profile does say you love to laugh, Naomi replied with a snicker. So shall we test that? Lead the way, Erin said as she stood hastily, before I lose this newfound bravery. Naomi lived around the corner from the coffee shop in a small one-bedroom apartment. It smelled of vanilla and books. Erin inhaled deeply when they walked in. They dropped their bags on the sofa, and Naomi turned around to face Erin, who was a good 3 inches shorter than her. May I kiss you? Naomi asked. Erin nodded. Naomi reached her hand around to the back of Erin's neck. She combed her fingers up Erin's scalp, grabbed a firm hold of her unruly curls, gently pulled Erin's head back, and kissed her deeply. Naomi tasted of sugar and her afternoon espresso. Erin raised herself up on her toes to taste her even more. Erin threw her arms around Naomi to steady herself. She felt like her legs were going to give way at any moment. Naomi pulled her mouth away, but maintained her hold on Erin's hair. Impatient, Erin tried to rush forward for more kissing, but she was trapped by Naomi's grip. She let out a small whine. Have some patience, brat. Naomi smiled. Let's move this to a more comfortable place. She walked to the bedroom as Erin floated behind her. Take off your clothes. Erin let her dress and panties fall to the floor. She wasn't wearing a bra. Lay on the bed. Erin gladly did as she was told, the cool sheets and a small shiver down her body. Naomi stripped off her clothes and sat on the bed next to Erin as she rummaged in her nightstand for the restraints she wanted to use. "You'll stop when I tell you to stop, right?" Erin asked nervously. "No," Naomi replied calmly. "I will not. I want you to yell stop and please and mercy as much as you want. If you truly want me to stop everything, your safe word is red." "Red," Erin repeated, more for her own benefit than Naomi's. Naomi lay down on her side to face Erin, who turned to face her. They kissed hungrily, grabbing at each other's soft flesh. Naomi parted Erin's legs with her knee and slid her thigh up until it was pressed against Erin's warm, moist sex. Erin moaned into Naomi's mouth, grinding herself against the thigh between her legs. Naomi felt Erin get wetter, then begin to tremble, so Naomi removed her leg from Erin's clutches. "Why?" Erin whined. "I was so close." "I know you were, but do you think I'm going to let you come that quickly? Remember, I'm a teeny tiny monster," Naomi cackled. Erin tried to lunge forward, hungry for more contact, but in one swift move, Naomi closed her hand over Erin's mouth and rolled, pinning Erin underneath her. She loved the sound of Erin's muffled whimpers as she kept her hand over Erin's mouth and lightly bit her neck. Naomi slid her hand down from Erin's mouth and placed it firmly on her throat, not squeezing, but using a firm grasp nonetheless. A shaky breath escaped Erin's lips, and Naomi kissed her fiercely while holding her down by the neck. She could feel Erin's pulse against her fingertips. Naomi noticed that Erin was holding her breath and moved her hand. "Breathe," Naomi commanded, and Erin gasped as if she were emerging from beneath a pool of water. "Put your arms up above your head. Cross your wrists." Erin locked eyes with Naomi as she slowly raised her arms and crossed her delicate wrists. Naomi held Erin's wrists in place with one hand while she lightly raked her fingers down Erin's pale body. "Hey," Erin shouted, "that tickles." "Does it?" Naomi grinned. "It doesn't tickle me." "I don't believe you," she mocked, while still lightly dragging her fingers up and down Erin's sides, chest, and armpits. The more Erin struggled, the more Naomi laughed, until Erin was able to stretch her neck up and grab hold of Naomi's nipple with her mouth. Naomi inhaled sharply, then leaned down closer to Erin, who sucked hard until Naomi's nipple was stiff. She flicked at it with her tongue. Naomi let go of Erin's wrists and propped herself up on the pillows. She firmly grabbed Erin's hair near the scalp and gently placed her new lover's face into her warm sex. Erin moaned into Naomi's pussy. The sound caused tiny vibrations to resonate between her labia and up through her belly. Erin enthusiastically licked up and down Naomi's vulva, using her fingers to expose the head of her hardened clit before making tiny, sucking kisses on it. Naomi ran her fingers through Erin's loose curls as Erin thrust her fingers deep inside Naomi's pussy, using her tongue vigorously. Naomi moved her hips rhythmically, grinding her pussy into Erin's face. Her mind went blank as her body took over instinctively, and she came hard, her body rigid with intense pleasure. She trembled and let out a ragged breath as she loosened her hold on Erin's hair. Naomi let out a satisfied sigh as Erin laid tiny kisses on the insides of her thighs. "Your turn," Naomi whispered. Erin winked. "You can tickle me more without tying me up, you know." And there is more tickling later in the story.
So you're right. There isn't a lot of tickling erotica out there.
I mean, and there may be, and I don't know about it, because that's the other thing. I mean, there's like huge swaths of erotica all over the place. And I mean, I try to keep up with the genre, but, you know, I don't know everything that's going on. So, you know, tickling erotica people, feel free to email me.
right. Call you out. No. Yeah. And say like, we have a whole community. We have a whole section on FetLife or whatever. Yeah.
But I mean, I do read hundreds of stories every year for this series and for other books I edit. And it's just not something I've seen a lot of. So that is part of what made that stand out for me.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I kind of like this idea of one person having a fetish or kink or whatever you want to call tickling in that story, and the other person not sharing that, but being open to exploring it and seeing what happened. I mean, obviously in real life, that might go that way, and it might go with the person thinking, okay, this is not for me at all, or not for me right now.
Yeah, I mean, that's how sort of erotica functions on these multiple levels, is that sometimes it's super hot and sexy, but sometimes it also gives us a window into other people's fantasies and then other people's communication style, negotiation, how they get consent. You know what I mean? There's, yeah, there is a learning piece to a lot of these stories, because it's like watching porn in that way, right? You get to see this, in this case, you get to read about other people having sex, and you get to pick up on all these ways that they sort of interact.
And I think it can be challenging to write about those consent conversations within erotica in a way that still comes across as sexy. But I think it obviously can be done and should be done. You know, I'm not saying everyone, I can't tell other people what they should write, but if you want me to publish you, like, I won't publish things where the consent part of it is not totally clear. And in fact, I've gone back to authors and said, I like your story, but there's some, I'm not seeing consent as strongly as I would like to, and it's, or it's unclear. Can you make it clear that this person wants what's happening to happen? And I don't think it was deliberate. Like, I think they thought that was included, like in their mind it was, but I wasn't getting that as a reader.
That's a fascinating piece of it, especially given our dialogue and drama around consent in this moment, right? Mm-hmm. Is that we need more examples of explicit consent. We need them actually everywhere, in every piece of writing and in every book.
And so, I like the way that was done. You know, there was that moment where you're like, wait, is she saying she's going to ignore her? And she's like, no, she's not saying she's going to ignore her. She's saying, this is your safe word. And this is, you know, I want you to be able to kind of work through that in your own mind of, do you like this? Or, you know, you can say, you know, words like no, and, you know, not mean mm-hmm. that, because you have this other word that you can say.
Yeah. Has anyone ever sort of pushed back when you've asked them to make consent more explicit in their story?
I haven't had to do it too often. And I think people are actually, the ones I've worked with are grateful for that, because I think the other thing is, as an editor, it's my duty to them to not have some reader read it down the road and be like, oh, this author doesn't care about consent, I'm never going to read them again, you know?
Right.
So I feel like I'm looking out for, you know, my audience, but also their audience too. And I think that especially if in a book of 20 short stories, that's 20 opportunities to model consent. And it's not just for people who are getting together for the first time. There can be consent. I mean, there's, you know, conversations between couples or established relationships.
Right, right. Okay, we're going to take another break. I hope you guys all enjoyed that, because I did. That's what waits for you when you buy this book. And Rachel, did you say the audiobook is also out?
The audiobook is out. It's narrated by Rose Caraway. And she also puts up a few free stories from the book on her podcast, which is called The Kiss Me Quicks.
Okay, that's great, because this is ripe for audio, as far as I'm concerned. And Rose is an amazing narrator. Okay, let's take a break. And when we come back, more with Rachel. Stay tuned. Hey, gang. You may already know about the tried and true Clone a Willy to make a silicone replica of any penis. In fact, a while back, we had actual listeners try it out, and their reviews were stellar. Well, now there's something brand new. The Clone a Pussy Plus Sleeve Kit. First of its kind, Clone a Pussy Plus allows anyone to cast an exact replica of a vulva in silicone and attach it to the included silicone masturbation sleeve. This is a truly one-of-a-kind toy and perfect for long-distance relationships. The creation process itself can be really fun, and the results make a great gift for any occasion. Clone a Willy is a woman-run company, and their products are sourced in the U.S. and hand-assembled in Portland, Oregon. And you know I've got a deal for you. Use the promo code Tristan for 20% off your entire order on cloneawilly.com. Hey, why don't you clone it and bone it?
Hi, everyone. We're Emma and Finn, the hosts of the Normalizing Non-Monogamy podcast. Each Wednesday, we interview people from across the spectrum of non-monogamy to hear and learn from their stories.
So far, we've interviewed a wide variety of guests covering swinging, polyamory, kink, cuckolding, and much more.
Even with all of these guests, we know that there are so many different dynamics and stories to tell that we've only scratched the surface.
So we'd love to have you stop by and give Normalizing Non-Monogamy a listen, and maybe even share your story someday.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at PuckerUp.com. That's Tristan at PuckerUp.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Hey, did you know that today is the official launch of my Patreon? That's right, everyone. I have a Patreon. Guess what the URL is? Patreon.com/Tristan Taramino. So today is the first day and you can go see what I'm up to. I'm actually writing a new book and it's not what you may think. It's a memoir. And it's not specifically about sex, although don't worry, plenty of sex and sexy time in there. And so I'm trying to cut back on my travel schedule and work schedule. You can read all about the amazing perks you get as a patron. For as little as $2, you can support me. For as little as $5, you can read my memoir before the general public. So check it out. And hopefully some of you will think, I want to support this, and you'll do it. And I appreciate you in advance for doing that. Okay, we're talking today with Rachel Kramer-Bussell, and she just shared this great excerpt from Best Women's Erotica of the Year.
Volume four.
Thanks, volume four. So Rachel, you also write, you know, occasionally or maybe somewhat regularly about your own life, and you're one of the most... I want to say brave, but I feel like that's like overused. You're one of the most uncensored writers that I know. You put stuff out there that I think other people would be like, ooh, I don't want people to know about this side of me or this thing I'm thinking or this thing I did. You've always struck me as like giving zero fucks about that, which is a great quality to have, because really, I think people really respond to your writing, and that's partly why, because you share stuff that sometimes has shame associated with it, or confusion, or like you haven't quite worked out a thing, and you still write about it, and I think people really, really appreciate that. Your latest piece, which I saw on my social media feed, but Raymond, my senior producer, was like, oh, I read this. We've got to get Rachel back on. It's on Self Magazine, and it's called I Suddenly Stopped Being Kinky, and I'm Not Sure Why. And you're going to share a little bit of that piece so we can talk about it.
Yes, I will just dive right in.
Great.
If there was kink involved, I probably tried it during my 20s and 30s. Spanking, bondage, choking, being ordered around, all of it turned me on. Dominant lovers, both male and female, indulged my submissive side, and I'd return from dates happily sore, sometimes sporting multicolored bruises I'd admire with pride. I even made BDSM part of my career, editing numerous anthologies of kinky erotica. I'm going to skip over definition of BDSM because I think your listeners probably know what it is.
Yeah, okay.
I was submissive to dominant lovers inside and outside the bedrooms. Some called me epithets I was aroused to hear, slapped me across the face, or used nipple clamps on me. The most exciting lovers kept me mentally on edge, teasing me about the things they wanted to make me do, like have sex with strangers while they watched. I sought out kinky partners, knowing that I would feel let down by someone with more vanilla, that is, non-kinky taste. When I discovered someone and I had mutually shared kinks, it was like I'd found a sexual soulmate who spoke the same intimate language I did. As someone who practiced kink in her sex life frequently and with almost all my lovers, I saw my kinkiness as a fixed part of my sexuality and the core of my erotic desires. Then everything changed. 7 years ago, at the age of 36, I started dating my boyfriend, D. What first appealed to me about him was his sense of humor, creativity, and honesty. We talked for 3 hours nonstop on our first date. And yet, from the start, the way we made love was about as far from kinky as I could get. We regularly enjoy oral sex and hand jobs, either as part of foreplay or the main event. We have intercourse in the one position that's most comfortable, given our size differences. Sometimes we use vibrators on each other. But none of those actions ever involved any of the aspects of BDSM that were the main things that got me aroused in past relationships. Our routine, and that's a word I use here with positive connotation, has only solidified over the years. I used to feel disappointed when I slept with a lover who wasn't as into dominating me as I wanted him or her to be. But I noticed immediately that with D, I didn't miss my submission in the bedroom. In fact, a few times he started to spank me and I stopped him after a few smacks. The spanking didn't arouse me. It felt neutral, which isn't what I look for in bed, and truly the opposite from how spanking stimulated me in the past. In fact, all of the behaviors I'd previously found totally erotic and central to my pleasure no longer turned me on. I want to clarify something important. I don't have any issues with my kinky past, and I don't feel shame over my past desires or previous work. I also know I'm not trying to contort myself to fit into a vanilla life to appease D or for matters of convenience. Rather, I was the one who changed. But perplexingly, there was no lightning bolt moment that made me decide to stop being kinky. I'm going to stop there, but yes, the title says I suddenly stopped being kinky, and I know I sort of painted that way, but it sort of feels like it almost snuck up on me. like it happened and I didn't know it. And then I, you know, started dating someone, and then, you know, I don't know. I've been thinking about this for a long time.
I was interested actually to see that within my social media circles, this was being shared by non-kinky people, occasionally kinky people, and then like hardcore leather lifestyle, I've been doing this for 15 years, people. And everyone was taking something from it. Like everyone was getting a piece of it, which I found just fascinating that it kind of crossed over in all those ways. And I think it speaks to multiple things. You know, the first part is, of course, this assumption that if we edit anthologies about this particular subject or cover it as a subject, that we are, as sex people, we're doing this all the time. We're swinging from the chandeliers. We're like all orange hanky, which is the hanky code for anything goes. You know, just these basic assumptions, right, that people want to make about your sex life because you write about sex explicitly.
Yes. And, you know, I think my fears about publishing this were partly about my professional reputation because, you know, I am editing a book of bondage erotica right now. And I thought, like, what if people are like, I'm not going to send her my bondage erotica because she's not going to understand it, or she's not going to, you know, do it justice because she's not personally kinky. You know, I think there's a lot of some of that, those feelings. And I think also just, I don't know what it is. Like, I wouldn't say that I'm a person who generally cares what other people think of me because just by the nature of what I do, a lot of people are going to, you know, not approve. But at the same time, I was nervous about sharing this. Like, I was pretty sure there would be other people who could relate, but I think I was just worried that people, I don't know, maybe it's just like a cool factor. Like, it's not, I think in some circles, I don't know if people outright say this, but there's a sense that, oh, well, if you're monogamous or if you're vanilla, you're not as fun, I guess, as
as cool,
kinky,
yeah, exactly,
or poly. And, mm-hmm. You know, I don't know if people explicitly think those things, but I think in certain circles, there's a sense of that, whether that's real or not, or it's just my perception. But there was a lot of fear. Like you said, like, I don't give any fucks. I actually give a ton of fucks, but I push past that because writing helps me figure this stuff out. And I think part of that for me isn't just the writing in private, it's sharing it and seeing what you know, people say in response. And not that, you know, I feel it more because other people said, oh, I felt that too. But there is like this bonding that happens, even if it's virtual and with strangers, where you're like, okay, I am not weird in the way I thought I was weird because at least one other person felt this thing too.
Yeah. I do want to say and support that, yes, in certain sex positive circles, there's a sense of like, how far to the edge can you go? Certainly, there are polyamorous people who look down on monogamous people and say, oh my God, they just haven't seen the light. They're so old fashioned or whatever, which is all bullshit. You know what I mean? It's all judgment. And so for folks who are on the margins already to then turn around and judge other people, is obviously problematic. But I do think that there are these sort of contests to see how out there you can be. And so to admit in print, I'm not out there, or I'm not out there anymore, or I'm out there, but in a totally different way than you expect, is a big deal. It's a big deal.
And you know, I think there was also this, aside from maybe what other people would think, is like, what did I think of myself? Because, you know, I think there is that assumption you talked about, but I also put myself out there. I was like, oh yeah, I'm going to, you know, be spanked at Dark Odyssey or be to do this thing. Or, you know, like I was out about being kinky and people knew that about me and I was fine with that. So I think I still almost felt obligated to, not obligated, but I don't know. I felt like I didn't want to be like lying to people like, oh, I'm still this thing that I was when I'm not. But I also think it did take me a little while to figure out, like, is this about my one relationship, or just this relationship that I'm in, which happens to be monogamous and hopefully is going to last the rest of my life? Like, are we vanilla, or is it me? You know, did I change, or did my circumstances change? And I was sort of trying to figure that out. And I think when I came to this conclusion that even if I wasn't with my current partner, I probably wouldn't want to be in another kinky relationship, that is when I wanted to dig a little bit deeper.
Yeah, no, I think, I mean, that's why I think this piece, it opens up so many questions. In some ways, it then generates more questions than even the ones you asked about it. It also makes me think of these notions of kinkiness or BDSM as practice versus, or desire, mm-hmm. versus as identity, mm-hmm. orientation, right? So,
yeah.
Oh, A-Rod's telling me we have to take a commercial break. So, okay.
Be continued.
So this is what I want you to think about on the break, everyone, is this idea that some people consider BDSM their orientation and some people consider it a desire, a part of the thing on the menu that they do. So let's take a break. When we come back, that's what we're going to talk about. So stay with us. The Pleasure Chest has a lot going on in the month of March. In honor of International Women's Day, Le Wand released a special edition Feel My Power Wand Vibrator. And it's one of the most beautiful toys I've ever seen and had the pleasure of using. You can get yours at Pleasure Chest. And if you buy any Le Wand massager, you get a cool gift pack while supplies last. March 17th to the 24th is Spring Fling. Spend $75 or more online and receive a free pocket rocket and free shipping. As always, there are a ton of great classes this month at their New York, LA, and Chicago locations. From impact play to sex over 40 to blowjobs and beyond. Go to pleasurechest.com to find out more. Use coupon code Tristan at checkout for a free massage candle with purchase.
Hi everyone, we're Emma and Finn, the hosts of the Normalizing Non-Monogamy podcast. Each Wednesday, we interview people from across the spectrum of non-monogamy to hear and learn from their stories.
So far, we've interviewed a wide variety of guests covering swinging, polyamory, kink, cuckolding, and much more.
Even with all of these guests, we know that there are so many different dynamics and stories to tell that we've only scratched the surface.
So we'd love to have you stop by and give Normalizing Non-Monogamy a listen, and maybe even share your story someday.
stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at puckerup.com. That's Tristan at puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. I'm talking today with Rachel Kramer-Bussell, who's a writer, editor, event organizer, and writing instructor. Hey, I also want to tell you, I am doing an event at Pleasure Chest LA this month. It's March 31st from 4 to 6 p.m., and it is a Centering Sex Worker Voices panel. I'm going to be joined by the goddess Corey, Avery St. Germain, and Susie Q, and they're going to discuss sex worker rights, the impacts of SESTA and FOSTA and anti-trafficking laws, decriminalization efforts, and what civilians, regular people, can do to support sex workers. It's also going to be a Sex Out Loud live event, so we are going to record the panel, and it will be an upcoming episode. So it's free and open to everyone. March 31st, Sex Out Loud Live at the Pleasure Chest, LA. Now, Rachel, you're doing an event at Pleasure Chest in New York, right?
In New York, the Upper East Side store, next Thursday, March 21st, 7 p.m. It's free, and it's a reading from the same book I was just reading from, Best Women's Erotica of the Year, Volume 4, with me and three of the authors. And if you get there early, starts at 7, I'm giving out cookies with the book cover on them to the first 12 people.
Okay, that sounds delicious. I just got a cookie with an image on it, and I was thinking, oh, the image is going to be gross. But it was just sugar.
It was sugar.
Yeah, it wasn't. Yeah, so I like ate the whole thing, and it was delicious shortbread cookie.
I'm getting my cookies from Nookie's Cookies, which I always misspell it, but like they're on Instagram. They're hilarious. Do you know them?
They do
sex toy cookies. They do butt cookies. They do BDSM cookies. They do, here it is, Nookies Cookies, NookieCookiez. Nookie Cookies.
Singular, Cookies Z.
Yes.
Okay.
And So
before the break, I raised this question, which I want to go into, which is this notion that for some people, kink is what they do. This is like a desire, a fantasy, a practice. And for some people, kink is who they are. They feel like it is hardwired in them. Some people call it a sexual orientation. And some people, their lives really do revolve around leather communities, and the people in them, the practices, the bars, the events. So I think this piece of yours like sort of speaks to that, which is for you, it wasn't a fixed identity.
I mean, apparently not. Now, I thought it was, and I just do want to clarify too. I considered myself kinky, and I was involved in at some various points in my life, like kinky events, but I wasn't as involved in the BDSM community as some of the people you were just talking about. But I did think of it as my community. I did think of it myself as a part of that world. And, you know, sometimes, you know, if you're talking to someone and you meet them at wherever and you find out they're kinky and you're kinky, there's just like a shorthand that you can jump into because you feel this shared bond. And I think that was the part more in some ways more than, you know, my sexuality changing, or at least equally that threw me, that like confused me, because I was like, well, what does that mean, like, for who I am? And you know, I think there were a lot of confusing things, because also, you know, I was in the first really long-term relationship of my life. Like, before this, I was in almost a one-year relationship, and now I'm in a seven-year relationship. So, you know, of course it's natural that things are going to maybe change around sex, but around other aspects of my personality have changed. Also, I went from my mid-30s. I'm in my early to mid-40s now. You know, I think just though that really surprised me that it changed for me in such a big way. It wasn't like, oh, I'm only really into it maybe like once a month or once in a while. It was sort of like, am I ever going to be into that again? And I don't discount the idea that I might be. I mean, there might be 10 years down the road, I might be kinkier than I ever was. I have no idea. But it surprised me, I will say that.
I mean, I know people who've had this experience. I'm thinking of a very, very long time couple, two women who were in the kink scene for decades. And at some point, one of them was simply like, you know what? I'm just not as devoted to it as you are. I don't need it in the way that I used to need it. And they were non-monogamous, and so they negotiated things and totally worked it out. But at some point, one of them just came to the realization, like, I don't have the drive for this in the way that my partner does. And my partner still does, right? And it's been consistent.
And I also think, I mean, you know, some people, it might be something they can kind of do casually, I guess, or you know, once in a while or whatever. But I think for other people, if it's this very vulnerable, intense thing that isn't just a physical thing that's like, you know, it's taking up your mind and your time and your, it's sort of just occupying your whole self, you know, that is I'm not trying to like make a hierarchy, but that's just a different experience. And so I think, you know, if you lose the drive to do that, then, you know, is it worth it to like, you know, how do you reconcile that? You know, like if it's just a casual thing, like maybe you could do it for a few hours here and there. But if it's more than that, I do think most people probably need some sort of deeper drive to pursue that, because it is like it just sort of takes over your life. That is too dramatic. But you know what do you know what I mean?
Yes, absolutely. And I also think part of getting older is that we have to acknowledge like grief about what we lose. You know, for me, I feel like there was a point in my life where I could do almost anything, right? I could have really, really physical sex. I could do scenes that went on a really long time. I could get pierced with like 100 needles. And you know, those days are over for me. First of all, I have chronic pain. And so I have to recognize the limitations of my body. And we do change and evolve. Like that's real, both psychologically and physically. And we can, you know, we can grieve for this used to be a really big part of how I looked at sex, how I did sex. And now it's not. Which I think just speaks to the kind of evolution and change that everyone's going to experience throughout their lifetime. Their sexuality just isn't going to be one thing.
And I think, you know, I don't think we're always prepared for that, because, I mean, and I guess for some people it might go a different way. Like in their 20s and 30s, they might be more, I don't know what you want to call it, sedate or, you know, traditional or whatever. And then in their 40s, 50s, beyond, they might have the opposite arc, I guess, of what I had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just think it speaks to this kind of fluidity that again, we have to always consider around. This is like people who come out as queer when they're like 50. Mm-hmm. And people are like, oh my God, so that marriage, it was a sham. And they've been in the closet and in denial for so many years. Well, the answer to those could be yes, or it could also be actually they just kind of figured this out. They actually figured this out about themselves, and now they're pursuing a different path. And that's okay. That, you know, that's okay.
I wanted to make it clear that I wasn't, you know, I'm very happy with all the things I did and that former identity, you know, it just, that's not me now.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for being on the show, Rachel, and for writing that piece. If you haven't read it, it's at Self Magazine. We will tweet out the link to it. You can find Rachel at rachelkramerbussell.com. On Twitter, she is at Raquelita and at BWE of the Year. On Instagram, Rachel Kramer Bussell and at Best Women's Erotica. And on Facebook, Rachel Kramer Bussell Author. Thanks so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
I also want to thank everyone who makes this show possible. Executive producer Karen Dana, senior producer Raymond Johnson, announcer Cooper Beckett from Life on the Swing Set, A-Rod, my engineer, and everyone at Voice America. Tune in next Friday, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern, for another edition of the show. Until then, check me out across all social media platforms at Tristan Taramino. And take some time to talk about sex out loud.
That's a wrap on today's show. Go to voiceamerica.com to listen to this and other episodes on demand or as podcasts. And make sure you come back next Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific, for Sex Out Loud with Tristan Taramino on Voice America Variety.